It's the Root Cellar, where regional history and family folklore come together, with your hosts Jim and Jan Strandley.
Hi, welcome to the Root Cellar. For a number of episodes now, the book by Kate Roberts has been used to determine our topics for the week. Miss Roberts has compiled all of the 150 people, places, and things that have shaped our state as a companion book for the Minnesota 150 Sesquicentennial exhibit at the Minnesota Historical Building in St. Paul. You can still witness this fabulous undertaking put together by the Minnesota Historical Society. Don't miss it. Speaking of things that have shaped our state, one topic of today's episode is literal, and the other topic is one who described our state eloquently. The literal shaping of our state is the glaciation of Minnesota, and the person who described this great land is James Madison Goodhue, the founder of the first Minnesota newspaper. Let's start with glaciation. Driving around this area, one can sense the presence of something huge that shaped this land many thousands of years ago. There are remnants remaining of a huge lake with sandbars and sandy beaches showing up along highways and byways. Large flatlands that allow one to see across them for miles, and potholes and lakes by the thousands. Yes, a glacier gradually receded from this area about 10,000 years ago, leaving the state in the shape that it is in today. People question why the Red River flows northward, and despite numerous dams and dikes, overflows its banks due to heavy rains or rapid snow melts. Much of it has to do with geological events that occurred thousands of years ago. A retreating glacier slowly melted, leaving in its wake a land that would become Minnesota, a land made of ice. It left a blasted landscape of bedrock, boulders, gravel, sand, silt, and water. Plants, animals, and eventually Lutherans colonized and scratched at the surface of the land, but the power of the glaciers still dominate our physical environment and shapes our work, lives, and our creation. Glacial leftover, Lake Agassiz, left a fertile lake bottom now known as the Red River Valley. It extended from the middle western portion of the state all the way north to Manitoba, Canada. A large overflow in the southern tip of the lake created the meandering Minnesota River and the fertile valley on both sides. The lake kept shrinking over the years until all that was left was a huge river flowing northward toward the direction of the retreating glacier. Other glacial meltwater streams created similar areas of the state. One carved the beautiful St. Croix River Valley to the east. The scored bedrock of northern Minnesota became the stunning lakes of the Boundary Waters Canoe Area, which we talked about in an earlier episode. There are hundreds of glacial signs in the southern part of the state as well. The glacier came, stayed a while, and then retreated, leaving all those potholes, lakes, and waterholes. The positive outcome of that is that we enjoy the recreation from them with the fishing and the hunting. The negative, of course, is that these waters provide us with our greatest common enemy in Minnesota, which is, you guessed it, the mosquito. The second topic for this episode is a gentleman by the name of James Madison Goodhue. He was the first editor of Minnesota's first newspaper, the Minnesota Pioneer. Remember this name of the paper, for it will become familiar to you later in the broadcast. James Goodhue was born in New Hampshire. Like many men of his era, Goodhue listened to the famous line, "Go west, young man, go west," and traveled westward. Along the way, he worked as a farmer, a lawyer, a novelist, before landing a job as a newspaper editor in Wisconsin. He settled down, got married, and began raising a family. But he always had a hankering for Minnesota, and when territorial status was announced, Goodhue and his young family boarded a steamboat and headed up the Mississippi towards Minnesota. Goodhue settled in St. Paul, purchased some newspaper printing machinery, and began publishing the first newspaper in the Minnesota Territory. The first issue of the Minnesota Pioneer appeared April 28, 1849, which is about 160 years ago. Newspapers were different back then. The editor would be making his money from selling the newspaper, not from selling advertisements. Therefore, to gain attention and sell the papers, much of the contents were the editor's views on politics or other current topics. He would write with skill and wit and express personal views and biases. Not everyone agreed with him, but they liked to read what he had to say. Above all else, though, James Goodhue's newspapers reflected his strong and unwavering commitment to attract settlers to Minnesota. He was like the predecessor to the local Chamber of Commerce. He would picture in words what Minnesota was like when few photographs were used at the time. Goodhue not only wrote about politics and other issues, but he joined clubs and organizations and assumed leadership in many of them. His views concerning various issues stirred some individuals to anger. One reader took a knife to James Goodhue when they met on the street. Since medical practice was in its infancy yet on how to treat wounds, James Goodhue died from the assailant's attack in 1853. Earl S. Goodrich took over the newspaper and became the publisher and editor. He made the news come to life and developed the paper into a daily publication. His competitor, Joseph A. Wheelock, started a paper called the St. Paul Press. He absorbed the Pioneer and called the new paper, you guessed it, the St. Paul Pioneer Press, the name of the paper still used today. Yes, James M. Goodhue was one of the people who helped shape our state of Minnesota. He loved the land and enticed many others to settle here. Now here is Jan, who also loves this land where we live, with her own story.
Speaking of newspapers, I want to commend the Thief River Falls Times for the newspaper that they produce every week, along with The Watch, which we get on the weekend. And I have someone in the studio with me today who does a column for the newspaper in Thief River Falls. Her name is Donna Meyer, my friend from St. Hilaire. She's going to tell us a little bit about the column that she writes for the Thief River Falls Times. Good morning, Donna.
Good morning, Jan.
Tell me a little bit about your column. I see that you have a whole page.
Well, you know, I have been writing this column since the late 1980s, and it hasn't always been a whole page. It used to be just a little piece of a page, but it's grown.
Well, good. And I see that it's kind of divided into different areas.
Yes. The original item that it kind of grew out of was the Turning Back the Times part, and that is kind of headlines, about three items or four items from the same week every year. Every 10 years back, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, and up to 130 years before now.
Well, where do you get your information? Just how do you do this?
I have a microfilm reader, and I have used some of the microfilm that the library has. They have a wonderful collection of most of the papers that have covered this area. Everything I believe that the State Historical Society has available, they've gotten copies of. But I also use some of the microfilm that the Times has in their
archives.
Archive.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Is it just from the Times? No. I see that it's from the St. Hilaire Spectator. How about that?
The St. Hilaire Community Club some years ago purchased all of the microfilm from the State Historical Society of the old St. Hilaire Spectator newspaper. It was one of two papers that actually was in St. Hilaire at one time. The original paper that was in St. Hilaire is gone. There are no copies of it, but it was quoted in some other papers, which is how we know about it. That was the Red Lake News. But the St. Hilaire Spectator, which started in the 1880s, went as far as 1942, and then it closed, and its readership lists were then sold to the Times.
Oh, and I see in your column that some of it is from the Red Lake County. Is that the one you just mentioned?
Well, Red Lake County is what Pennington County was part of.
Oh, that's right.
And
yeah.
The thing about each of the different pieces of my column is I used the same exact week that many years ago, 75 years ago for Out in Society, 100 years ago for The Spectator and also for the Upper Falls, and 50 years ago from the Times.
Well, it really is interesting. I noticed one column that said that how many years ago? 50 years ago, the Lake of the Woods ice was almost 6 feet deep. And that's as cold as we have it now, for certain.
Well, you know, when I'm looking through these old newspapers on the microfilm reader, I'm basically just looking for things. What would somebody else like to hear about? You know, I see little funny items. 100 years ago, they used to say really funny things about people. There was a guy who was a sheriff, Charlie Fellman, and one time they mentioned in the St. Hilaire Spectator, this is 100 years before, they said, "Mr. Fellman has requested us to indignantly deny that the deer that he brought back from deer hunting was purchased from the Indians."
Oh, dear. Well, times were different then. Here's another little piece from that article. It says, "Don't pick up any purse you find lying on the sidewalk next Wednesday, folks. It's April Fool's Day." Now, who would even think of doing something like that in this day and age?
Well, I'm sure there are people that would pick up a purse if they saw it on the sidewalk.
Well, but for not just for an April Fool's joke.
There was another one in that same column. It said, "Look out for school children, we are advised, especially if they're driving cars."
Yeah, that's good. So do you do your work at home, Donna, or do you do this right at the Times office?
Oh, I do all of it at home now, and I email it in. When I first started doing it, I was employed at the Times as a reporter and later as community editor, and I did the history page as part of that operation. One time, my son was telling me that somebody had commented to him how much they enjoyed the column and that they really read it every week, and they were really a faithful reader. And then they said, "You know, I do have one question. Where does she get all that information?" And my son said, "Oh, she makes it up." What?
That wasn't good. You know, I also understand that you have another article in the Times. I didn't realize there was more than this one.
I actually am kind of an editor for the other one. The other one is called Times for Toddlers, and it runs weekly in the Times as well, in the first section of the paper, usually within a page or so of the weddings and society items and that type of thing. But what that one is based on is it's got an activity that you can do with a young child. It's got some books and videos and things like that from the library that they're recommending for little children. And then it's also got some parenting tips from the ECFE program.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. I can understand why I skip over that one. I think that would more pertain to young mothers and fathers.
And grandparents.
Well, that's true. Probably some good ideas.
Well, one of the things that is kind of fun is the out in society part of the column. And in that one, I don't maybe look for things that are funny or maybe of interest to people that are new residents here or anything. That one is really a lot more for people who their families have lived here for a long time. What I do there is I try to find like a birthday party that lists, say, 8 or 10-year-old little children, and then it's got a list of all the guests. And quite often somebody from the nursing home will call or write to me or something, and they'll say, "You put in that 75 years ago my friends and I went on a sleigh ride." And they just get a big kick out of that.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Person might be 90 years old now. And or they'll say, somebody will call me and say, "I saw where my mother went to a birthday party for 7-year-olds.
Yeah, that's it. That's so precious.
I also usually in that part of the column put in something from the high school newspaper, which at that time was called the Lincoln High School Progress. So I try to run something that, makes some little jokes about some of the students or tells a little bit about one of the classes, what the girls' home ec class was making cotton dresses or sewing aprons or something like that, or the drafting class was drawing perspective buildings, things like that.
Oh, that's really interesting. You know, it just goes to show how lucky we are in the small towns to have newspapers like this that really tell the story of our area and give the flavor of our people. And we don't see that so much when we just read like the Minneapolis Tribune or even the Grand Forks Herald isn't for our community. So I think all of you realize the importance of the smaller town newspapers, and I hope you'll support them. I thank you so much today, Donna, for visiting with me about this. It's been real interesting, and I'll just bet that you have gleaned a few more readers than you had before, even.
I can always use more readers.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
The Root Cellar with Jim and Jan Strandley is a production of Pioneer 90.1. You can hear it on our website, pioneer90.org, and on the air Mondays at 6 p.m. and Wednesdays at 7:35 a.m.